and welcome to a simulcast of the Breakout Hockey Program. I almost see the dust shaking off the computer screen as I say the name, the Breakout Hockey Program, and of course the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare as well. We are here for the 2014 Stanley Cup playoff preview. And not only am I here, not only is Mike Sempervivi here, I'm shocked there was a mere moment in his day that he was free to be able to do this show with so many other radio shows and podcasts that he does. But not only are the both of us here, we have real live hockey reporters, not just guys that that Damian Cox would call bloggers in their basements. These are guys who actually cover games. They are credentialed. They're doing what we don't do so that we have stuff to talk about. So basically what we're going to be doing, a couple short segments here, running down the Eastern Conference half of the playoffs first, then the Western Conference half of the playoffs, and then Mike and I will wrap up and give our predictions such as they are. I'm sure they'll end up being 100% correct. But Mike, before we bring up our first guest, how are you doing?
You know, I'm not bad. After that little opening there, I think I'm ready to go. I think the technology's in place. And again, a reminder to anyone who just slept walked through the first part of the program, if you're listening to this through the WrestlingObserver.com website and you're expecting to hear us talk a lot about what is Prince Devitt going to do unless he gets on skates in time for playoff season, which is now upon us, we have nothing to say about him.
Yes, that'll be next show, which will be coming up very soon. But no, all hockey talk here for the next, I don't know, probably 30, 45 minutes or so. So with that, I guess, Mike, unless you had anything else to add, we will bring in our first guest, a man who has been on this show before, a great man. He covers the New York Rangers. He covers all New York teams for the Metro newspapers as well as for the Associated Press. Dabbles in mixed martial arts writing as well. Dennis Gorman is on the line. Dennis, how's it going?
Good, Adam. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing very well. Did I get everything? Is there anything else? I feel like it might be like a Todd Martin situation and you're not getting your plugs in.
Yeah, I think you got everything.
All right, then. So I guess and we are going to talk Eastern Conference playoffs, but we just briefly before we started recording, we talked a little bit off air. 30 seconds. John Tortorella, what the hell happened this season?
As a man that has survived John Tortorella before,
exactly.
What is your opinion on John Tortorella now?
I hope John Tortorella rented in Port Roberts and didn't buy. I think he's probably getting fired, and if he doesn't get fired, he's going to be on the hottest of hot seats entering next season.
Will he beat out Craig Berube? Will he beat out Dennis Savard? And if he is back next year, will he get fired after the first preseason game?
I'll give him probably until game 20 next season. I'll give him 20 games. I think Trevor Linden is certainly going to hire a new general manager, but I think you look at the Canucks being an older team and used to playing a certain style under Alain Vigneault, and Tortorella's system is not Alain Vigneault's system, and I think it physically wore on some of their guys like the Sedins and Ryan Kessler, and even today he said he was unable to reach Alex Edler, and Alex Edler's a terrific defenseman, but he was, I believe, minus 15 this year. He just had a terrible year in that system, and I think you can't continue trying to hammer square pegs into round holes. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, you know what, Dennis? The actual number, believe it or not, for Edler was minus 39.
Yeah, I thought it was something. I remember hearing minus 34 with a few weeks left. I mean, that's what, two-thirds of Ovechkin.
That's incredible. Mind-numbing.
Man.
Much like the style that John Tortorella preaches. I guess we could talk about some teams that have nothing in common with the John Tortorella coach team this year. Playoff teams. Eastern Conference, when you look at the matchups, I almost think and maybe it's a function of the new playoff structure, both conferences, but particularly in the Eastern Conference, even the matchups that on the surface seem to be obviously heavily tilted towards the one seed in each division, you can make somewhat compelling arguments that an upset is possible. I mean, you look at, I guess, really maybe even before Boston and Detroit, Pittsburgh and Columbus. And I know these aren't two teams you specifically cover, but obviously covering Eastern Conference teams, you see them quite a bit. It's almost cliche to talk about, well, it's playoff time. Is a beach ball going to get by Marc-Andre Fleury? But having watched both these teams, I think there's a legitimate argument that can be made for Columbus being able to upset Pittsburgh. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. You hit the point with Marc-Andre Fleury. He didn't look particularly good Saturday against the Flyers, and the Flyers clinched the third seed in the Metropolitan Division. And the Penguins have had a ton of injuries this year. I mean, they're getting some guys back now, but they just look slower and older and a little more fragile than they have in years past. And I Columbus is a team that plays a really hard physical system style, and Sergei Bobrovsky, I think, is good enough to steal some games. So it wouldn't surprise me if Columbus, you know, found a way to win that series in seven. I'm taking Pittsburgh in six, but that series looks like it's going to be a long, tough series for the Penguins, which I don't think is what they need right now. I think they're still searching for some confidence, some identity, and I just don't think this was a team they wanted to play in the first round.
And if it does go long, I almost think it does favor Columbus just because of the work ethic. I had an opportunity about a week and a half ago, went to Columbus to watch them play the Blackhawks. And you can really get an appreciation pretty quickly into any game that they play just at how hard they work. Obviously, and they traded Gabrick away. That was never really a great fit to begin with. Maybe not the most skilled team in the Eastern Conference, but if Pittsburgh – if they come in, you can't imagine that they would take them lightly, but if they do, you could see, I would almost be surprised if Columbus doesn't take one of the first two and specifically the first game in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I mean, I could see a situation similar to that of the Islanders last year in the playoff series. They split the first two games in Pittsburgh, came back to the Nassau Coliseum, and teams split 3 and 4, and that's when I believe it was game four and Marc-Andre Fleury got pulled from Thomas Vokoun. And I think you can make a really good argument. The Islanders could have won that series had Andrew McDonald not gotten hurt and had gained a Barkov play, had given them even 900 save percentage goaltending. And Sergei Bobrovsky is certainly a better goaltender now than if gained a Barkov. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Dennis. I know, obviously, they would have rather have seen the Washington Capitals in there, but looking overall at the Eastern Conference, did the NHL, really overall at the entire playoffs too, but especially in the East, did they kind of get what they want? I mean, with the exception of the Capitals and Penguins, you know, not ending up being the first round game, which I don't think anybody realistically thought it would be. I'm sure somebody at NBC and at Versus was just, or NBC Sports was salivating over the possibility of it. But did the NHL pretty much get what they want by redoing things in the way that they did?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The goal for them was to kind of create divisional rivalries and divisional play through the playoffs. So and they think they're getting that, and certainly regional rivalries with Rangers, Flyers, and certainly Columbus, Pittsburgh, and then, you know, and Boston, Detroit. They obviously with the series out west, I think I believe Chicago, St. Louis. They want those regional rivalries to kind of, in an attempt to kind of draw TV ratings and to boost TV ratings in the regular season.
Yeah, really,
Adam, I'm sorry, Adam. I got a quick question for you just because you went out there and know that scene a little bit more than I do. As far as Columbus, I mean, is it going to be, and I'm not, and this is not being flippant at all to Columbus fans, but it seemed like it was about 75% Blackhawks fans, or at least they were being vocal.
It was,
I mean,
crazy.
Pittsburgh fans go to Columbus. They go to Washington. They travel.
It's a three-hour drive.
Yeah, I mean, they travel the entire area incredibly, incredibly well. So there's going to be a lot of, you know, Penguins fans there. But, I mean, is Columbus set up as an organization? And I guess, Dennis, you can speak a little of this, too, to get something going there and be able to kind of make sure that they're the home team in this?
Well, they've done a couple of things. I'll sort of – there's an A and a B to this. A is that they've instituted something where – only people with Ohio zip codes can purchase tickets for the first 4 days that playoff tickets were on sale. I would imagine that's probably just about ended. I guess it would have to probably be ending on Tuesday if the series is starting on Wednesday. So they did that. You would think that would help. However, they had the same plan when regular season tickets went on sale. They called it Defend Nationwide Arena. When we went, we were unaware of this, so right when tickets first went on sale, we picked out the seats we wanted to get, which they were 14 rows off the ice, right on an end, and we were going to buy the tickets, and it said, you know, you can't buy them for another week at that point. We went back a week later, and the exact same tickets were still available, and this was for a Friday night game against the Blackhawks. So I think that they're trying to keep Penguins fans out, but I don't think they'll be even remotely successful. The vibe I got in Columbus, there's a few things very quickly. First, there were a ton of Hawks fans. There had to be at least 60% Hawks fans. You always hear people talk about it's a college football, college basketball town. It's an Ohio State town. That's clearly true. You probably saw as many people wearing random Ohio State merchandise as you saw wearing Columbus Blue Jackets stuff. In some ways, the fan base, it really reminds me of the dark days of the Blackhawks fan base, which I was intimately familiar with going to so many games, where it's a very – I shouldn't say necessarily very small, but it's a small core of hardcore fans that even though their team misses the playoffs just about every year and the one team they made it, they got swept, they are diehard fans. They love their team. They know everything that's going on. They know the league. I definitely think there is something to build there, but it's going to – you don't have that generational thing where fathers went with their sons and their grandfathers took their grandkids. You've only got, 13, 14 years of history there. And again, the only history you have is missing the playoffs or making the playoffs and not winning a single playoff game the one time they made it. So I definitely think there's potential, more so than, say, a Sunrise, Florida, but it's going to take a sustained, 3-4 years of making the playoffs and – having a little bit of more success than just getting there.
Daddy, tell me about the golden years of Rick Nash.
Well, exactly. Rick Nash. Tell me about the those halcyon days of Rostislav Kleslo. But in any event, Dennis, looking at the other half of the bottom half of that bracket, New York and Philly. Me and Mike were talking about this a little bit earlier before we started. I have New York going pretty far, but to me this is maybe more than any other series in the East. To me, this is the ultimate pick'em. It's also very clear as to, at least to me, how it's going to go. One of two ways: either Philadelphia imposes their will physically and is able to take the series relatively quickly, or sort of the Rangers' speed wins out. To me, it might be one of those series where each game is close, but the series itself only, you know, maybe goes 4, 5, 6 games.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you look at the regular season series, the team split 2-2-0. The Rangers, I think they, if memory serves, they won both games at Madison Square Garden, and the Flyers won both games at Wells Fargo Center. I tend to agree with you. It's going to go one of the two ways. I think the Rangers' speed could negate the Penguin the Flyers' size. I think the bigger issue for the Flyers will be the defense and then goaltending. Can Steve Mason steal a game? Can he outplay Henrik Lundqvist in a series?
How strong is the Steve Mason narrative? Because to me, you looked at the early part of the season with him, he was great. Maybe through December, mid-December. And then there was a stretch where he reverted for several months back to that probably, 895 career save percentage that he's had. And then he kind of leveled off again towards the end of the season. But are you sold on the fact that he – that he's that guy we saw for the first few months of the season, or that guy that we saw in his first rookie year, and not the guy of, you know, the 8.95 save percentage for the rest of his career? Because if he's not, to me, this could get real ugly real fast.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Steve Mason being the guy. People I've talked to within the Flyers, their goaltending coach, Jeff Reese, he and Mason have a long-term relationship going back to Mason's days in juniors, and he thinks Mason can be a legit number one goaltender. But there you see flashes where he looks really good, but then you also see where he gives up that one really awful goal that should be stopped, and that's just kind of what kills you, kills any kind of thought that he's the guy that can be a legit number one and be the goaltender for a Stanley Cup champion.
Is there an issue then, though, with Ray Emery? Because Mason, you know, has been banged up a little bit, and Emery is a very popular guy in that town. And obviously, you know, there's the Flyers want to beat the Rangers, and the Flyers fans want to beat the Rangers, and they are, you know, they like sticking it in people's faces that said they weren't going to do anything this year, and they were just, you know, it was this and that and the other, and they'd love to, you know, they'd love to squawk. Are they going to want to squawk at Mason if they come out and, say, lay an egg in the garden? Because it's kind of funny, you know, it's the Rangers play better seemingly on the road, except for one team, and that's been the Flyers over the last couple of seasons. After game one, which the Rangers could win in a dogfight, is anybody going to want to say, give Ray Emery the shot, look what he did with Chicago, and just use that, and is that going to be an issue?
I think it could be. I think if Mason has a bad game one, you'll hear some talk about, well, should Ray Emery go? Should Ray Emery get a start? And they brought Ray Emery in to be a backup. Paul Holmgren said when they signed him, what was most impressive about Ray Emery. Holmgren said 17-1 on last year's Blackhawks team, and that's a terrific win-loss ratio, but he was also on a terrific, terrific team. And
it's a totally different style, totally different defense. I mean, I can speak from experience watching him. I mean, he played very well. The game against Calgary was one of the best goaltending performances I've ever seen, but there were a lot of nights where he was facing 16, 17 shots, maybe 20, maybe five of those prime scoring chances, if that. And in Philadelphia, like you mentioned, as far as defense being at least as much of a concern as goaltending, he's facing a lot higher quality scoring chances, both in terms of, I guess, in terms of quality and volume.
Absolutely. You know, right now the Flyers people believe that, Andrew McDonald has kind of stabilized their back end. And, you know, Andrew McDonald is, I think he's a pretty good 4, 5, 6 defenseman on a really good team, but he's in a position where essentially he has to be their Duncan Keith and he has to be their Brent Seabrook or their Nick Hjalmarsson. And
he's not a 22-minute guy, and that's kind of, I don't. To me, he'll get exposed a little bit. We even saw it on Long Island when he was playing that many minutes. That it's not the best slotting for him.
Absolutely, and the problem on the island was they were playing him about 27 minutes a night, and he was getting, like you said, he was getting exposed. But no, he's a guy. If he's playing 17 minutes a night, I think you're in really good shape. But first in Philly now, first on the island now in Philly, he's. You know, they've asked him to take on an increased workload, and I think against the wrong team he gets exposed. And I think with the Rangers' speed and their playmaking and the fact that they're now able to roll four lines effectively, that's going to be a problem.
Hey, defenses here for a minute and talk about McDonough and Girardi. Obviously, not playing Tortorella's style of defense. Girardi is in much better shape physically than he was last year. McDonough has come into his own this year with, you know, some bumps and clicks here and there, but they do make a very good duo. is are they going to have enough? Because the one thing Philadelphia can do when they're on is have that onslaught that will even continue onto the fourth line, you know, at times with LeCavier. When it comes to defense, you know, shaping up against, you know, what are, you know, if nothing else, even though they don't have a, you know, a lot of wins under their belt, there's a lot of experience on Philadelphia, and they're being, you know, manned right now by Giroux, who has just played fantastic for much of the season. Do the Rangers have enough to actually stop, because of the size issues, do they have enough to stop Philadelphia if Philadelphia gets a roll on?
I don't think a team stops a guy like Giroux. I think they try to limit him as best they can. And certainly, I think Alain Vigneault is going to match up Dan Girardi and Ryan McDonough against the Giroux line. But then you look at a guy like Mark Stahl, and guys like Mark Stahl and Kevin Klein, they're going to get some ice time for sure, as will John Moore and Anton Strahlman. So I think the Rangers feel reasonably confident that in their back end that they'll be able to handle what the Flyers throw at them.
A little bit quickly, I guess, because we're running out of too much time here. But the other two series, I guess, first off, Tampa and Montreal. To me, that's another one that's a real pick'em. I think that the depending on the Ben Bishop injury, I know Anders Lindback looked good in his last couple starts, which is in stark contrast to how awful he's been for the majority of the season. But let's just say, all things being equal, if we assume that Ben Bishop is back, if not for doesn't sound like for game one, but relatively early, do you really see a decided favorite in this one, or is it really a coin toss?
I think it's a coin toss. You look at those teams, they're really even. And I think the Bishop injury, if it's long term, if it's something that keeps him out of games one and two, that plays well for Montreal. But if it's the case where he misses game one, comes back for game two, then yeah, it's a pick 'em. I tend to trend towards Montreal a little bit. I like what Carey Price has done this year. I like Pacioretty. He's finished the season really strong. And I think P.K. Subban might have a little something to prove, considering the year that he's had and the controversies that seem not self-made, but made by Michel Therrien in terms of playing time. I think it's given him something to try and prove.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree. That's been one of the undercurrents all season. Has been the especially towards the end of the season, several nights where Michel Therrien kept PK Subban well under 20 minutes. At least one game where he kept him under 18, which is a bit crazy. But to me, this series, a lot of it's going to come down to whether or not defensively Tampa has answers for that Desharnais, Pacioretty, Vanek line. That's I'm not sure how much how many people, especially in the States, have been watching a lot of Montreal since the trade deadline, but a pretty strong argument could be made that that's been, if not the top line, one of the top two or three lines in the league in the last 5 or 6 weeks or so. Offensively, you figure, especially with Galchenyuk out, if they shut down that line, Montreal, it might be in tough. I would imagine that line, there'll be a steady dose of Ryan Callahan coming at that line.
Yeah, I would agree. But if you, again, looking at Vanek for a minute, when he was on the island, he was on the top line with John Tavares and Kyle Okposo. And for about 2 months, that was the best line in the league, hands down. Just their production was incredible, and he certainly brought that to Montreal, and he's added kind of a dangerous goal scoring element to a team that plays a really strong defensive game, and it's physical along the boards with guys like Brandon Trost, and so yeah, it's going to be a fun series. And I think a guy like Callahan is going to try to use this series in maybe an attempt to try to prove to suitors in free agency that he's worth, you know, 6 or 7 years at $40 million or $42 million. I don't think he gets it, but I think it's important for him. This is an important playoffs for him.
What's more overrated, the failure of the Lightning penalty kill or the failure of the Canadiens power play unit in the last couple of weeks?
I think the failure of the Canadiens power play unit. I still think when you look at guys like Pacioretty, PK Subban, Thomas Vanek, I think there's enough there, Andrei Markov, I think there's just enough there where they'll be able to score. They'll be able to score and produce when they need to.
And I guess lastly, Boston and Detroit. You could go a lot of different ways in this. I mean, what Detroit has been able to do this year, I know it's sort of been talked to death, but what they've been able to do with all the injuries to come through, make the playoffs relatively in relatively solid fashion. Do they have a chance against Boston? I mean, I think.
The hockey gods being very nice to the city of Detroit for always having a great franchise and giving hope to that city for so long.
Yeah, 23 straight years of making the playoffs. It feels like half the guys on the roster this year were they weren't even alive the last time Detroit missed the playoffs. The last time Detroit missed the playoffs. But you figure if anything, what we've seen in the past out of Boston, you've seen it this year very. Very starkly that Montreal with their speeds given Boston problems. You saw the Blackhawks give Boston problems in the Stanley Cup final last year with their speed, with the young forwards in particular that Detroit has. Do you think they can go in there and at least maybe steal a game and make it interesting, or is this just going to be the big bad Bruins romping all over them?
It wouldn't surprise me if this went six games. I think Nyquist and Tatar and the young Red Wing forwards have given the Bruins problems. If you look at the season series, Detroit won three out of four. It wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world. I just think the problem is over in seven games. I do think Boston's size will play a factor. And they still have enough speed, and they're able to roll four really good lines. So and I think if you're going to match up goaltender against goaltender, Jimmy Howard is really good. Tuukka Rask probably should win the Vezina. So I think that's probably going to be the difference in the series. It's going to be Tuukka Rask being just a little bit better than Jimmy Howard, and the Bruins size being in the Red Wings not being able to have an answer for the Bruins size.
Mike, anything else before we wrap up?
No, I don't think so. Just want to thank Dennis a whole lot for being on.
And Dennis, what? Just out of curiosity, I assume from what you were saying that it'll be the Rangers in Philadelphia that you'll be covering.
Yeah, I will be. I'll be handling the Rangers Flyers series.
Oh, you didn't get the Brodeur retirement tour assignment?
I've had it the last week and a half, so
That's true.
You don't want more? Are you sad that they didn't make the playoffs? It sounds like such a good time.
I really thought they had if you look at that team, the way they were constructed, they accomplished more than what I thought and what a lot of people thought they would. Just getting to the last week of the season, still being in playoff contention, especially when you factor in they lost all 13 shutouts that they were in, or shootouts that they were in, which is kind of unfathomable. But I just think they didn't have enough this year. And now the onus is going to be on the new ownership and Lou Lamoriello to go out and spend some money in free agency to find a goal scorer.
Not Michael Ryder wasn't a key free, yeah, that the fact that Michael Ryder and Damian Bruner were their key free agent acquisitions after losing Kovalchuk, and they did come that, and really they came a .500 shootout record away from pretty solidly being a wild card team.
Yeah, I think if you look at that, that's a hell of a credit to Pete DeBoer, who even though he probably won't win it, he certainly deserves some Jack Adams consideration.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because nobody's mentioning him, even, like you said, even being one of the three nominees.
No one's mentioned him, and he kept the team competitive. He kept the Marty Schneider debate from kind of enveloping the room and kind of becoming splitting the team in half. I think he's done a terrific, terrific job, and he's not a guy who's had a lot of a lot of help with his team the last few years. I mean, he lost Parisi 2 years ago. He lost Clarkson and Kovalchuk last summer. And, they don't really go out and add big-name free agent scorers to help bolster their team. It's usually call-ups. And, this year Mike Sislo was called up a number of times. Eric Jelena kind of shuttled between Albany and the Devils. I thought he did a terrific job.
Oh God, Dennis, I tried to limit myself and cut it off, but I just now, since Adam asked you one, I got to ask you one more too.
This isn't going to be about the Leafs, right?
It won't be about the Leafs. Be here right. All day, but who gets fired in Washington, if anyone? Is it McPhee? Is it Oates? Is it everybody? What exactly is Ted Leonsis? If you were just looking from the outside looking in, don't even try to put yourself in his spot. What do you have to do here? Because I don't know if it's obviously the system isn't necessarily working. Boudreaux still touted his even when he came back to Washington this year to play that. Hey, look, it was working in a lot of ways. And when it comes to if the Capitals don't score two or three goals, they don't have any shot in hell of winning, which is not necessarily put all on the goaltender. And McPhee's, the moves that he has made over the last couple of years, and just the fact that they're running out of time. They've been running out of time for a while. What exactly are they going to do here?
I think Leonsis has to fire everyone. I think in the last few
because
weeks...
Because Hershey's great. If they just flip him with Hershey, everything would be okay.
Yeah, well, I think the first issue is if you look at Oates in the last week or so, he's publicly thrown guys under the bus. Ovechkin on the back check against Dallas, and then Halak about not wanting to play against St. Louis.
He's calling a lot of people out for giving up and not wanting to play.
Yeah, and I don't think you can do that if you're a coach and then still expect to have support in the room, especially when it's a guy like Ovechkin who's your captain and franchise cornerstone. And Halak,
and you haven't won as a coach, correct?
Yeah. and Halak, you're essentially trying to sell on wanting to stay in Washington, and when your coach basically says he doesn't want to play against his former team, well, if I'm Jaromír Halák, why would I want to play for this coach? And then McPhee, I think the worst thing George McPhee did was panic and decide his team needed to be restructured after they lost to Montreal a couple of years ago in the playoffs when Jaromír Halák basically shut the door on them in the seven-game series in the first round. They went from playing a style that no one could match, scoring 3.5 goals a game, to be in a team that thought they needed to grind it out and be a defensive-oriented team. And I think if you have guys like Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom and Mike Green, and I understand Mike Green had a pretty awful year, I don't think it makes sense to have them play a style that they're just not well-suited for. And you look at some of the people that they brought in, they brought in Matt Hendricks at one point, Joel Ward. They brought guys in that just didn't, their talents didn't mesh with what they had already in place.
Now let's talk about the Leafs. No.
No. God, no. First off, we could do another hour. Second off, that's the last thing in the world. The fact that after, hopefully
future
after...
Future Montreal bias slipping out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's my... I don't want to... You know, I don't want this to seem like it's a Toronto Sports Network podcast.
Hey.
I know how much you love it when I start talking about that, Mike. So the then the Eastern Seaboard Programming Network, so...
Just because the world revolves around all of it, it's, you know, hey, it's big shoulders. We can wear that.
we'll leave it at that. But, Dennis, thanks again for doing this. I forgot to mention on Twitter as well, at Dennis Gorman. So, Dennis, thanks again for doing this. And like I said, we'll probably, I'm sure we'll try to do another one of these, if not before the second round, then definitely a little bit later on down the line in the playoffs.
Great, guys. I was glad to come on and, let me know when you need me to come on. I'm always happy to do so.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks. And with that, we'll be back in a few minutes, or actually not a few minutes. This is not actual radio. We'll be back in mere seconds with Ryan Pike out of Calgary, who will be talking Western Conference and hopefully Brian Burke's hair as well. So we'll be right back.